And the Old Testament Sabbath laws were some of the most distinctive laws in the ancient Middle East. And you probably know the fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That's just the first part of it. The rest of it goes on to describe what that looks like, that there should be no work done on the seventh day of the week. All work is to be done on the first 6 days of the week. The seventh is a day of rest. And the Mosaic Law gives four reasons why the Israelites were to keep the Sabbath. First, it was an imitation of God who rested from his creation on the seventh day. It was also a reminder of their slavery in Egypt. Deuteronomy tells us that. It was given as a day of rest for their servants and their livestock. And it was also, and most importantly, a sign of the covenant between God and Israel. And this command was so important that God prescribed the death penalty as punishment for violating the Sabbath law, so that anyone who worked on the Sabbath was disregarding the covenant between him and God. Consequently, he was cut off from the people of God and fell under God's wrath. Now, in the Old Testament, the Sabbath law was relatively short and simple. It really can be summarized as do no work. But centuries after the Israelites received the law from God, they became intensely interested in all the minutiae of keeping the law, including the Sabbath law. And so there began to grow up a group of scholars. And over the century, these scholars debated what it means to keep the Sabbath. They were really working through the definition of what is work and what is not work. And in the end, they drew a clearly defined boundary around the law to help keep people from breaking the Sabbath law. And in doing so, they answered questions like, is walking through town with an earring in your ear work? Now, you probably never would ask that question, but they did, and they answered it. They also asked the question, well, what if emergencies happen on the Sabbath? So if your house catches fire, is it permissible to do the work to put out the fire? Is it permitted to carry your belongings out of the house so that they don't get destroyed? These and dozens of other questions were debated among the teachers of the law. And so that in the end, they formed a body of teachings about what could and could not be done on the Sabbath. And these teachings addressed if you could light a lamp on the Sabbath, or if you could put a pot of water on the stove on the day before the Sabbath so that it would keep warm through the Sabbath. One rabbi taught that a man broke the Sabbath if he carried out of his house a stone large enough to throw at a bird. That's the kind of detail the Sabbath law became concerned with. And in the end, the point of the Sabbath was really completely forgotten. So that instead of it being a blessing and a memorial, it became a burden. And all those Sabbath regulations make up the background to the events in Matthew 12. The people of Israel were deeply concerned. So this, by the time you get to Jesus' day, this is not just something they're talking about in the universities about the philosophical discussions about the law. These are things that the average person is deeply concerned about. They wanted to know what they could and could not do on the Sabbath. And they had a very significant and detailed list so that everybody knew what things broke the Sabbath law and what things did not. And they condemned any Israelite who violated their list of Sabbath regulations. So all of that is what's going on in Jesus' day when the events in Matthew 12 take place. So keep those in your mind as we read Matthew 12 verses 1 through 14. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. And his disciples were hungry and began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." But he said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priest? Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath, the priest in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? Yet I say to you that in this place there is one greater than the temple. But if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath." Now when he had departed from there, he went into their synagogue. And behold, there was a man who had a withered hand. And they asked him, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" That they might accuse him. Then he said to them, "What man is there among you who has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value then is a man than a sheep? Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Then he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and it was restored as whole as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and plotted against him how they might destroy him. So this section starts with the disciples of Jesus plucking heads of grain to eat on the Sabbath. So as they're walking through the fields, they would have just reached out and grabbed some of the grain that was right there. They would have taken it, they would have crushed it in the hands to break the shell off of it, and then they would have popped the raw grains into their mouth. And this was considered a violation of the Sabbath laws. And so the Pharisees complained to Jesus that his disciples were breaking the Sabbath. And Jesus' response is that they're not breaking the Sabbath. And to prove his point, he pointed to two events in the Old Testament. And I'm not going to look at really at either one of them, except for just to mention them. The first one, though, is when David fled from King Saul. He went to the tabernacle, and he ate the showbread from the tabernacle. That was bread that had been placed out that day for as a show, as a set on display before the Lord. There were 12 loaves, and they were taken and replaced regularly. And the bread that was taken off of that table was then to be eaten by the priest. If you weren't a priest, you couldn't eat it. David comes along and he says, "I'm on a mission for King Saul. I have nothing to eat." The high priest takes the bread, gives it to David. David gives this to his men, and they eat the bread that was restricted only for the priest. And Jesus is saying, and he points out, that David did not sin by eating that bread, and he did not sin because of the need of the moment. And second, every Sabbath day, the priest of God work. They get up on the Sabbath morning and they offer sacrifices. They maintain the temple throughout the Sabbath. But they break the Sabbath every single week, but they are without sin because they are fulfilling greater responsibilities. And part of what Jesus is arguing here is that the Old Testament, the absolute adherence to the law of Moses, gives way before greater needs. Now, that can potentially open a can of worms. I don't want to suggest any kind of subjectivity here where if I feel like something's more important than obeying God, I can disobey God because I think this is more important. There's some clear standards that are being laid out here. And so don't use this in any way just to say, "Well, I can do whatever I want whenever I feel like it because I think this is more significant." That's not what Jesus is laying out. Rather, what Jesus is showing is that there are moments, there are instances where greater needs really surpass the keeping of specific. And in this case, we're talking, for the most part, ceremonial laws, the laws of Israel that he's discussing here. And it is that debate that is the background for verses 9 through 14. That debate with the Pharisees about his disciples keeping the Sabbath. Now, Luke 6 tells us that this happened on a different Sabbath than the one than the discussion about picking grain. Matthew here, he doesn't say it's the same day, but he joins them together in this chapter to make a point. He's showing us this definite connection between the conversation in the fields and this coming conversation in the synagogue. And so on this Sabbath day, Jesus went into the synagogue. In the synagogue was a man who had a withered hand. We don't know the cause of his problem. Possibly had suffered some injury which resulted in the loss of motion in his hand, but whatever it was, one hand was probably paralyzed or generally useless and was certainly much smaller than the other. And this man had been afflicted with this ailment for some time. It's not something that just occurred that morning, and it was not life-threatening. And those two facts are important to what's about to happen, because the traditional keeping about the teaching about keeping the Sabbath law permitted some treatment of injuries suffered on the Sabbath, and they permitted whatever was necessary to save a life. However, the rabbis did not permit the treatment of long-standing illnesses. So whatever could be done the day before the Sabbath or the day after the Sabbath could not be done on the Sabbath. And the Pharisees called Jesus' attention to this man with the withered hand. And they do so. Verse 10 tells us that they might accuse him. They're attempting to set Jesus up to reveal him as a breaker of the law. And so they ask Jesus, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? And I think it's noteworthy, they did not dispute Jesus' ability to heal. A few verses after this, they're going to accuse Jesus of performing miracles by the power of Satan. But what they never do is deny Jesus' ability to miraculously heal. So even though they hate him, they're dead set against him, they're looking to defame him in every way they can, his miracles were so obviously miraculous that the one thing they could not and did not do was deny the miraculous healings. And so they asked him instead, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Now, I'll remind you again, this was an ailment that could wait until the next day. The man's life was not endangered by him waiting one more day for healing. And no faithful Jewish doctor would treat that man on the Sabbath. And so if Jesus healed that man, the Pharisees would have the evidence they needed to make a formal charge against him of breaking the Sabbath. And so Jesus' response to them is in the form of a parable. He asked them a question, and it's a parable and a question together. And he asked them, what man is there among you who has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? So Jesus uses a very familiar event. I've seen on the internet that sheep are very notorious about falling into ditches and pits and holes, and they're very bad about that kind of thing. And so this is probably something that they all had to deal with at some point in time. It's a very familiar event, and Jesus is using it to teach a greater spiritual truth. And the question that he asked actually is one that touched on a matter of debate among the legal theoreticians. We have writings from before Jesus' life that state no one was allowed to lift livestock out of a pit on the Sabbath. So before Jesus' life, it was forbidden. We have writings after Jesus' life that indicate you could help an animal out of a pit on a Sabbath. So we don't have anything from during Jesus' life that would addresses that, you know, that the rabbi spoke to that, but it obviously was a matter of some ongoing debate. And presumably, in the question here, the sheep's life was not in immediate danger. So the assumption is the sheep could have survived the day. The Sabbath ended at sunset, so the owner of the sheep could have gone out after dark, rescued the sheep without violating the Sabbath or risking the sheep's life. But Jesus' question has an assumption. Read it again. He said, "What man is there among you who has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out?" Jesus assumes everyone hearing him would rescue the sheep right away. Jesus brings this question down out of the theoretical into the very practical and immediate of where they all lived. And what he says, let me rephrase his question. He says, any one of you who have a sheep which falls into a pit on the Sabbath day, you would lift it out on that day, wouldn't you? And they all be probably maybe looking at the Pharisees around them to see if they're looking, but they would all be agreeing. Every good farmer is going to take care of his sheep. He may not fear the sheep is going to die, but he is not going to let it suffer one moment longer than necessary. And then Jesus asked another question, which drives home the point, verse 12, of how much more value then is a man than a sheep. We can set a value on sheep. You can ask Barb. She can probably tell you what a lamb goes for right now. If I don't think Jack sells mutton, but if you go into a grocery store and you go that does sell mutton, you go in the meat market, you can find the value of a sheep by the pound and tell you what it is worth. How about a person? Can you measure the value of one human being? Can you purchase people by the pound? Of course not. We know, everyone knows, that humans are far more valuable. We really can't even talk about human value in terms of money. Because just to talk about human value in those terms is to diminish the true value of humanity. And if humans are far more valuable than animals, and if every reasonable Jew would help a distressed animal out of its distress, no matter the day, how much more should a reasonable Jew help a person in distress, no matter what the day? That's the point Jesus is making. That's what he says. Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And Jesus then commanded the man to stretch out his hand. The man did so and was immediately healed. Again, Jesus could have waited one more day to heal that man. The man would not have died. He would have simply gone about his life in the manner to which he'd become accustomed. Everything was a little bit harder for him, but he managed. He couldn't do a lot of things other people could do, but he got by. A part of his body was completely useless, but he'd gotten used to that. What difference would one day make? In Luke 13, Jesus healed a woman whose muscles had been bound up for 18 years. So much so that she was bent over, was not able to stand up straight or to lay flat. For nearly 2 decades, she was in this condition. And Jesus saw her, and he healed her on the Sabbath day. Do you know how the leader of her synagogue responded? Basically, the leader of her church. Do you know how he responded? He should have praised God that she had been healed. He should have rejoiced that she who had been so terribly afflicted was now set free. He should have been happy for her, and he should have worshiped the one with the power to heal her. But he did none of those things. He was mad. In fact, Luke tells us he was indignant. He told the gathered congregation, "There are 6 days on which men ought to work. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not on the Sabbath." Now, the ruler of this synagogue was a respected leader in their community who was more concerned about keeping their Sabbath regulations than he was for the well-being of a woman who had suffered horribly year after year after year. And the Pharisees truly loved the Sabbath more than they loved others. They completely misunderstood the law. And just like the ruler of the synagogue, the Pharisees here in Matthew chapter 12, they're not happy that Jesus is healed. They're not rejoicing that Jesus has done this. Instead, what they do, verse 14, they went out and plotted against him how they might destroy him. Their response to the healing of this man is the plan to put Jesus to death. They respond to mercy with murder. And what a tragedy this is. They have God the Son right in front of them. And all they can see are their own laws. They were worried more about their standards than their hurting man in their midst. They were more worried about their own traditions than they were about the God-man that was standing before them, revealing to them His power and promising them His kingdom. And Jesus completely rejected the value system of the Pharisees. He insisted the well-being of a person was more valuable than the traditions of the Pharisees. That's why he said it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Jesus understood the point of the Sabbath. The Sabbath was not given to prolong sorrow. It was not given to make life more difficult or to be a burden to people. The Sabbath was given for the good of mankind. It was given to bring rest to their bodies and soul. The Sabbath was given to remind the easily distracted of their covenant with God. The third chapter of Mark also discusses this same event. And it adds the phrase in there, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. God created the Sabbath for the benefit of mankind. He did not create men to keep the Sabbath. He created the Sabbath to keep men. That's what he is saying. Any Sabbath regulation which adds to or extends human misery is a misuse of the Sabbath. The law was not given to harm men, make them unhappy, or prolong their suffering. Now, by this point in time, you may be wondering, so what? That may be very interesting, but we don't really do the Sabbath thing. So it doesn't really apply to us. So the question is, does this passage have any bearing on my life? What does this passage teach me about Jesus? And I'm really glad you asked that second question, because that's a very important one. Whenever you read the Bible, you should be asking, what does this teach me about Jesus? What does this teach me about God? And so I'm going to answer that question, but before I do, I want to mention one question I'm not going to answer this morning that's related to this whole section. That question is the issue of a Christian's relationship to the Sabbath. Are we supposed to keep the Sabbath or not? And that's a question that many people struggle with, and there are groups around that have a very definite opinion on that they try to promote that opinion and convert other people to holding their opinion. But I'm not going to explain to you today. I don't have time, and it's really not the focus of this section of Matthew. So I'm not going to explain to you why Christians are no longer obligated to keep a Sabbath. I do believe, and I think the Bible is clear, we're not under an obligation to keep the Sabbath or keep a Sabbath. If you want to hear my discussion on the subject, you can go to our YouTube channel. The church has a YouTube channel. Look for the sermon entitled A Better Hope. I preached it back in November of 2021. A Better Hope addresses this question, and it really gives a good overview of why we do not have to observe a Sabbath. But the reason that Matthew included these debates, this miracle, this parable, is to teach us something about who Jesus is. In this passage, You look down back to verse 6. I say to you that in this place, right here, standing before them, is one greater than the temple. Verse 8, for the Son of Man, Jesus, is Lord even of the Sabbath. So what Jesus claims in this passage, and this is why Matthew joins these two events together, is because Jesus says, I'm greater than the temple. I am Lord of the Sabbath. And then he shows it. He, by his actions, by his conversation, he shows he is Lord of the Sabbath and greater than the temple. And to understand the significance of that, you need to understand that the Judaism of Jesus' day had three major anchor points which defined what it meant to be a Jew. And it separated the faithful Israelites from all the other peoples of the world. Those three essential and unique elements were circumcision, Sabbath observance, and temple worship. Those three things distinguished the Jews from everybody else. And they were the boundary lines of what it meant to be a faithful Jew. So that a person who did not keep the Sabbath could not rightfully claim to be a Jew. It didn't matter his family lineage. If he wasn't keeping the Sabbath, he had no claim to be Jewish. One who did not go to the temple was really not a part of Israel. No uncircumcised man had any part in Judaism. Jesus' claim here to be Lord of the Sabbath was a claim of mastery over that which defined Israel. He was claiming authority over that which Israel revered and which defined them. He set himself up as the authority to determine what can and cannot be done on the Sabbath. He claimed the right to make the determination that doing good on the Sabbath was permitted. Even though this verdict was contrary to the established opinion of the Pharisees and all of the great rabbis, that Jesus announced that they and all their rabbis were wrong. He was claiming an authority over the Sabbath and an authority greater than the rabbis of Israel. He was claiming to be the greater one. And when Jesus said that he is greater than the temple, he was claiming a glory greater than that possessed by what the Jews esteemed most. Because the temple really was the center of their worship of God. If they did not have the temple, they could not fully obey the law of Moses. And the fact of the temple there in Jerusalem kept them centered on Jerusalem. So that even those who lived on the other side of the Roman Empire, they traveled to Jerusalem for the feast. That was where they went to worship and obey their God. Jerusalem was still their capital, no matter where they might live. And yet Jesus claimed to be greater than that temple they revered so much. Now, I do not think that in this passage we have a direct statement that Jesus is God. But we certainly have strong statements implying he is God. The overall tenor of this passage reveals Jesus as the one Israel had been longing for. So that this passage shows to us that Jesus is the King and Messiah of Israel. Who else but the Messiah could be greater than the temple? Who else but the King of Israel could claim to be, and who else but God could claim to be the Lord of the Sabbath? Who else but God could heal as he did? And if Jesus was not God and was not Messiah, then his words are proof of either extreme arrogance or self-deluded mania. So we're left with a choice. Jesus is either exactly who he claimed to be, or he was a liar, or he was a madman. That's the only options. Scriptures makes it plain that Jesus is exactly who he claimed to be. He is God the Son who became the Son of Man to give rest to his people. And he proves it by his works. In John 5, we are told of yet another time Jesus healed a man on the Sabbath. And the Jews again accused him of breaking the Sabbath. And there Jesus tells them, "The very works that I do bear witness of me that the Father has sent me." Who could heal like Jesus did? You read the Old Testament and you do not find a prophet giving sight to the blind or restoring strength to the lame or rebuilding withered hands. They were unusual works performed by one greater than the prophets. They were powerful testimony that God the Father agrees with Jesus, that Jesus is God the Son and Israel's Messiah. Jesus did not have delusions of grandeur. He is the King of Israel. He is her God. He is superior to the Sabbath, and he is greater than the temple because he is able to do all that the Sabbath and the temple could not accomplish. He is able to give unending rest to those in the turmoil of sin. And Jesus gives to men, still today, gives to men what their religion, their ritual, their church, their creed, their law, their system, or their philosophy can never achieve. Jesus gives rest, true rest, to sinners. We know that the Sabbath and all the rest of the Old Testament law was a shadow that pointed ahead to Christ. And Jesus fulfilled what the Sabbath foreshadowed. He gives rest to all those who trust him. And the rest that Jesus gives is a present rest. It is a rest for the soul of those who obey him. The life of sin is a life of trouble and turmoil. Many of you know this far too well. We all know the unrest and the conviction of sin. And for the Christian, a life of sin is a life of conviction. It's a life of upset and discontent. But when you confess and forsake your sin, he gives rest to your sin-troubled heart. He gives healing from sin and strength to live righteously. When you run to him for forgiveness, for salvation, he takes away all your sin. He reconciles sinners to God the Father, and he gives peace to those hearts disturbed by sin. He gives peace with God to those who were once the enemies of God. So that Jesus lifts up the heart crushed by sin. So that he who is greater than Sabbath and temple and religion and ritual gives healing from sin and eternal peace to all who trust him. So we know that Jesus is the good shepherd who reached down to rescue his sheep out of a pit of sin and lift them up to eternal life and eternal rest with him. And Jesus is God who does good to men. He is God who came to seek and to save the lost. He is God who shows remarkable mercy to men. And he is God who is our example for doing good to others. The point Jesus makes in verse 12 is not just that it's okay for him to do good on the Sabbath. He is laying out a blanket statement. It is good. It is right to do good on the Sabbath for all men. And this is a point that we all need to be reminded of from time to time to broaden it out just a little bit. The commands of God must never be used as an excuse to justify not doing true good to others. Now, I don't have time to get into the discussion of what is true good and what is truly beneficial. But what I mean is that it, what is really good is not always going to be what the person wants or appreciates even. So that's not necessarily the measure of that which is truly good. But that this call to do good is not a call to sentimentality. It's not a call to acceptance or promotion of sin. But it is an exhortation to never use our righteousness as an excuse to prolong someone's suffering. To refuse to help one who is in immediate need. So if the house of the lesbian couple next door catches fire, you should be the first one there to help put out the flames, rescue their belongings, and give them comfort. You don't approve of their sin. You shouldn't invite them into your house and let them share one of your bedrooms. That's a different issue. But you should not refuse to do them the necessary good because they are in sin and you recognize their sin. You, when you see someone hurting and in need, you help them. Even if you need to skip church one Sunday morning to help them, that's fine. You know, you shouldn't skip church on a regular basis. You shouldn't stop giving and giving to other things on a regular basis. But when there's a genuine need and you have an opportunity to help, even if it means you don't do something that you normally do and you know you should do, it's all right. This does not give us any excuse to ignore the commands of God. We have to take God's commands to us seriously. You must also take seriously the responsibility to do good to others. You must imitate Christ. You must give genuine help to the ones you meet. And so simply do good to all, like our Lord does good to all.